Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers, Harriet Williamson and Martha Deal. At the controls this morning, for the first hour, Kyle Mabry, and for the second, Henry Frain. Back in 2002, President George Bush charged that Iran was working to develop nuclear weapons, declaring that the country was part of an axis of evil. Relations between Iran and the United States have been tense ever since. Just last month, however, the U.S. government reported Iran had stopped its nuclear weapons program back in 2003. At the same time, people speaking for the White House continue to argue that Iran's nuclear ambitions are a serious problem. In this part of Focus 580, we will be looking at some basic questions. Can we limit the spread of nuclear weapons, particularly in the Middle East, but generally also around the world? In this hour, we'll be talking about international security and nuclear non-proliferation, and our guest is Ambassador Robert Gray. He's director of the Bipartisan Security Group at the Global Security Institute. He is the former U.S. representative to the Conference on Disarmament, and was also a leader of the State Department UN reform team. The Conference on Disarmament is an international body that was set up to negotiate arms control agreements and, in fact, did successfully work out conventions on biological weapons, chemical weapons, and also the Comprehensive Test Ban Treaty. Ambassador Gray was a senior fellow on the Council of Foreign Relations and counselor for political affairs of the UN mission to the United Nations in New York. He also served as acting deputy director of the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, as well as counselor for political affairs at the U.S. mission to NATO in Brussels. He's joining us this morning by telephone, and as we talk, questions certainly are welcome. The number here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have toll-free line, and that one is good anywhere that you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. So if you might be listening over the air around Illinois and Indiana, or over the internet across the country, either way, you may certainly use the toll-free line. Again, here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, and toll-free, 800-222-9455. Ambassador Gray, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And yourself?
Well, fine, thank you.
Well, I appreciate you giving us some of your time.
Well, I'm delighted to help out.
Certainly, we would like to talk very specifically about the concerns that not only the United States government, but other governments indeed have about Iran and its potential to develop nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. And also, perhaps in a larger sense, we could talk a little bit about the problem of proliferation around the world. To start, though, on a positive note, it's perhaps sometimes on this issue difficult, but I think it's probably worth mentioning that, in fact, certainly over the last few decades, one can say that you can point to positives, progress that actually has been made in the area of non-proliferation. We can certainly say that the number of nations that have nuclear weapons hasn't grown dramatically, and in fact, there have been a number of nations that had nuclear programs that did decide to abandon them.
That's correct.
So perhaps that would be a give us a place to start.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about what sort of successes that we have had, let us say, in the past 20, 30 years.
Well, if you look at the perspective from the time the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty was signed, at the time, it was probable that as many as 36 or 37 countries could have the capacity to manufacture and create nuclear weapons if they wanted to. And since that time, only three countries have chosen to do so. And there's a couple of notable successes in the sense that Brazil and Argentina both agreed to sign the NPT and agreed to forego the nuclear option. That South Africa had a weapon and disbanded it and joined the NPT, came clean. And Libya was making some tentative efforts toward trying to do something. It never really amounted to much, but they indeed have forsworn the opportunity to pursue nuclear weapons as well. So on the whole, we're looking at a world that has a couple more nuclear weapon states than we'd like to have, but on the whole, people have resisted the temptation and signed on to the treaty. So that's the good news.
Well, let's talk specifically about West Asia and the Middle East, just because
yes,
this seems to be a place of particular concern, because we have states that we know are capable of developing nuclear weapons and, in fact, have accumulated some of them.
Yes.
Israel, Pakistan, and India. We know that there are other states that have had, that appear to have had nuclear ambitions, and the one that this administration now for some time has been concentrating on is Iran.
That's correct.
And for a long time, there has been this concern. The United States, the government of the United States, has argued that Iran was interested in developing nuclear weapons. The government of Iran, for its part, has said no. We're interested in developing nuclear power to generate energy, that we're not interested in nuclear weapons. But that certainly was the assertion of the U.S. government, and not only the U.S. government. And I wonder what you make of that, and then also what you make of now the most recent intelligence finding that was just announced last month that showed that, in fact, now in 2003, that Iran abandoned its effort to develop a nuclear weapon.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a great deal of concern about a country as energy-rich as Iran professing that they're developing nuclear power capabilities, and it's for peaceful uses only, especially when it's coupled with the sort of rhetoric we've been hearing for the last couple of years from the Iranians. But indeed, it is clear from the latest national intelligence estimate that they ceased working on developing weapons about 3 years ago. And that's the good news, and it is good news indeed. The bad news is, of course, is they're continuing to accelerate reprocessing and enriching uranium. And that gives you, over time, the capability to produce enough to move ahead to create a nuclear weapon with the material you have accumulated. So the good news is they're not pursuing development of a weapon. The bad news is they're continuing to reprocess uranium to a state where they'll at some point have enough uranium to indeed go for a nuclear weapon if they choose to do so. Mm-hmm. So it's a mixed blessing, but, I'd say that the glass is probably half full rather than half empty. But, you know, the real problem with Iran, I think, is that we've had no diplomatic contacts with them for a long time. A whole generation of Iranians have grown up that have never had any contact with the United States except for the music they get from the Iranian diaspora in Los Angeles. They have a lot of legitimate concerns about their own security, and when you call someone a member of the Axis of Evil and you say, I won't talk to you unless you agree in advance to stop doing all the things I don't like, that's not a negotiation, it's not diplomacy, it's just bullying. So they have some concerns that bilateral concerns that I think we could come halfway and begin a dialogue with them, not just on the nuclear issue. Not saying we won't talk to you until you cease doing this, but just to get a dialogue going to try to improve the overall relationship, which is fundamental.
Well, here is indeed, it seems to be the central question, because if we have decided that it's important for the two governments, Iran and the United States, to talk about, say, nuclear policy and their attitudes towards nuclear weapons, one has to be able to talk.
That's exactly right.
And we have not been able to do that for some time. So then you have some insight, having been a diplomat, how it is that, and whether it is, and I imagine you would say, yes, it is possible, for the United States and Iran to get back to the point where they could indeed sit down and talk about anything.
Well, you know, I think that I think diplomacy is rather like Dr. Doolittle. You have to talk to the animals if you're going to convince them to do something. And diplomacy is not setting preconditions, but getting together with people with whom you're in an adversarial relationship and trying to work out and compose your differences on bilateral as well as multilateral issues. This administration has not done that, and it's unfortunate, creates instability where we could be maybe working more positively to reduce instability, if you'd like. It's all a question. You cannot tell a fellow, I won't negotiate with you unless you stop doing the following 10 things. That did not work in North Korea, and it would not work in Iran or anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
A diplomacy is about getting people in a position where they can compose their differences in a way that both people feel that they've gotten achieved something.
Just to take one step back for a moment, and then I have a caller, Will, we can get to. I know that along now for some years that that this has been a big concern, that is the potential of Iran to develop nuclear weapons. There have been some people who have said...
You say Iran or Iraq?
Iran.
Yeah.
Iran to become a nuclear state, nuclear power. There have been some people who have essentially argued that it's something that we can do little to prevent, and that in fact something that we could learn to live with, and that if Iran did indeed develop nuclear weapons, there would be worse things. Do you really think that this is something that it's enough of a concern that one really ought to be concentrating diplomatic efforts and concentrate on trying to persuade the government of Iran not to go nuclear?
I think diplomacy is always the preferred option if it works. Clearly, if Iran were to proceed to develop nuclear weapons, one would not be surprised to find other people in that area of the world who are concerned with their own security to proceed to try to either secure them or develop them on their own. And the last thing we need in a very chaotic part of the world is the advent of more nuclear weapon states. It's not in anyone's interest, the international community's interest, our interests, or indeed the interests of the people of the area to have that happen. So it's, you can't say, well, if the Iranians do it, that's the end of it. Others will proceed to do something as well, and it's quite likely that we'd see all sorts of unsettling things occur there in the area. So yes, I think we should exercise all the diplomatic options we have in our toolkit to try to prevent this from happening.
We have a caller that we want to bring into the conversation. Let us do that. And it's someone who is listening this morning in Urbana on line one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
Didn't the president of Iran come to this country a little while ago to hopefully negotiate? And my impression was that they insulted him and he left. Do you know anything about that? Could you talk about that?
Yes, I think I can answer that. The president of Iran came to the United Nations to address the United Nations General Assembly, which a number of heads of states do every year when the General Assembly is in session. While he was here, he was invited to speak at Columbia University, and he was given a pretty insulting reception by the president of Columbia, and responded in kind, and then he subsequently left. And he appeared on a couple of talk shows. I think he's on Charlie Rose as well. But he wasn't an official guest of the United States. He came here actually to address the General Assembly of the United Nations, and there was no plan on his part or on our part for him to have any official meetings with American diplomats or government authorities.
It seemed like a very bad thing to do, to insult him like that.
Well, I don't think it's, I'm not a graduate of Columbia University, but I was appalled at the way the guy was treated.
Mm-hmm.
In the Middle East, as in many parts of the world, you don't insult a guest.
Yes, of course not. Well, thank you for your remarks.
All right, well, thank you. Other questions and comments are certainly welcome. Let me introduce again our guest. We're speaking with Ambassador Robert Gray. He is the director of the Bipartisan Security Group at the Global Security Institute. This is an organization that's interested particularly in issues like nuclear arms control and nonproliferation and disarmament. It was founded by Senator Alan Cranston, and if you're interested in the Institute and finding out more about it and these issues, they do indeed have a website. So you can very easily get to them on the web. Our guest is a former U.S. representative to the Conference on Disarmament. This was an international body that was set up to negotiate arms control agreements, and indeed has when it comes to issues like biological and chemical weapons. Questions certainly are welcome. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. In this region, there are a number of places that should give us good reason to be concerned. And I'm interested in perhaps having you reflect a little bit on Pakistan, as we certainly have seen recently plenty of evidence that is a place where there is potential instability. And here we have a case where Pakistan is indeed is a nuclear power, has demonstrated its capacity to build nuclear weapons, and has a nuclear arsenal already of some size. Do you think that this is a place that hasn't gotten the level of attention, particularly on this issue, that it should?
Well, indeed, the Pakistanis do have nuclear weapons, and they acquired the knowledge and the wherewithal clandestinely, and as well as the material to build them. Yeah, it's a real concern. They also had a fellow named Khan, who was the head of the nuclear program, who was exporting nuclear technology and stuff all over the world. He was a very troublesome guy. They've got him rounded up now. But there's a real concern that, the Pakistani concern is obviously they did it because the Indians did it, and there's a contentious rivalry there. But it is a very turbulent society, to put it mildly, always has been. There are vast portions of the country which are basically tribal fiefdoms, and the writ of the government doesn't run into those areas, and so there's a potential for real instability there. That's why from time to time the military has stepped in and tried to sort things out, not very successfully over the years, but there's a strong military component too. So the concern is, one, that they have the weapons, and the other concern is that if real instability and turmoil takes place there and a radical regime takes over, what happens to those weapons is a matter of grave concern to us and to the entire international community.
Mm-hmm. Particularly when it comes to AQ Khan, I think that some people would say that within the last couple of decades that no single individual has been as responsible for the spread of nuclear know-how as he.
That's right.
And that it would suggest that the mechanisms that we have in place, the structures that we have in place to try to prevent the spread of nuclear know-how, are flawed.
Well, we have certainly made every effort to bell this cat, and this, to the credit of the current military regime, this guy is sort of in what I would say is not only retired, but out of the system, and they have instituted very strong safeguards to prevent these weapons from falling into unfriendly hands. But indeed, he was really a part of the problem, and he's now, I think, effectively under control, and the government is taking strong steps with our urging to secure these weapons as safely as they can.
Well, does that cause you to have concern about the mechanisms, structures that are in place that were intended to prevent this very thing from happening?
There are IAEA safeguards inspections which apply to countries that are members of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty, and there are additional protocols on some of those things that have strengthened it. So, yeah, we have a mechanism in place for those countries that are members of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. The problem with Pakistan and India and Israel is they're not members of the non-proliferation regime, never have been. To prevent the proliferation from in the signatory states, of which there are over 180, I believe, yes, we have good mechanisms, and we're strengthening them all the time. But these three countries I mentioned, Israel, India, and Pakistan, have never been members of the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. North Korea is, and that's enabled the inspectors to go back into North Korea, and they were working out arrangements there by talking to the North Koreans, which we're not doing with the Iranians, so that hopefully we can contain that one.
Let's talk with some other listeners. We'll talk next with someone in Danville. This is our line number 4. Hello.
Yes, you mentioned Israel and Pakistan and India and not belonging to the non-proliferation treaty. I'm interested in how much America's aid to Israel, Pakistan has contributed to the growth of these nuclear weapons, or the fact that we tend to agree that having these things make, especially in these particular areas, make the world a little bit unstable, potentially. How do you justify us giving as much aid as we have to specifically Pakistan and Israel to kind of, in a sense, because everybody else is aware of these things, and especially in the Mideast, we're actually contributing to the instability of the area?
Well, I can say that that none of the military assistance that we've given to, or any economic assistance we've given to either Israel or Pakistan, was directly related to their acquisition of nuclear weapons. They acquired capability, the technology, and the uranium in both instances clandestinely, as did the Indians. What they did was reneged on agreements they had with supplier countries not to enrich this uranium that they were using ostensibly for nuclear power, and it did enrich it illegally and in contravention of their understandings, and acquire the weapons. But there is no direct relationship, I would say, between American military and economic assistance to either of the three countries and their decision to acquire nuclear weapons.
Well, I'm not saying that there was direct help from this, but I'm saying that we have given them military aid, and our other places that have developed nuclear weapons, we've been very, I guess, antagonistic, or the ones that are trying to develop nuclear weapons, we've been very antagonistic with. Why haven't we been so lenient with people that are not willing to sign a treaty and want to develop weapons that are potentially going to cause a lot of problems?
Well, it's a complex question, but basically when we provide military assistance to a country, it's because we have concerns about the regional stability and the threats that they are facing and that are of concern to us. Clearly, a lot of the assistance to Pakistan was generated by a concern over the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan and the threat to stability in Pakistan and in the region as a whole. The relationship with Israel is a deep and complex one, but basically in the beginning with the 67 war, the only source of military equipment available to the Israelis became the United States, and we have continued that relationship ever since because they're in a very unstable situation there, and we would not want to see a situation arise in which their security was or their survival as a nation was threatened.
Well, why I mention this is that sometimes we do things and we don't anticipate long-term effects.
That's entirely correct. And
Wilson situation, the movie, we're trying to help out the Afghanistans, and we wind up really supporting the Taliban and then supporting Osama bin Laden indirectly. And then all of a sudden we got a bigger problem than we ever anticipated. And I think sometimes supporting, whether or not we're supporting nuclear weapons, but just supporting aid for people that we know are doing these things, it seems like that causing us more problems in the long run.
There's a blowback effect when you do that. That's absolutely true, and I think the Charlie Wilson movie it really gets right to the heart of it. When you go into a place that's like Afghanistan, that's in a conflict situation, I think the lesson to be learned from that and from the intervention of the first Bush administration into Somalia is that these are complex, tough issues, and you can't go in and, you know, just pull out the minute the conflict is over. You take on an obligation, it seems to me, over the long term to help them create some stability, and that means education, it means medical attention, it means dealing with all these complex issues. You can't just go in, meddle, and take off. You have to be there for the long haul, and that's, I think, the lesson both of Somalia and of Afghanistan.
Well, what I'm saying is basically we've supported countries that have developed nuclear weapons, and once they get nuclear weapons, they're not going to give them up very readily. And there's
no, they're not, and you know, they make the decisions, sovereign decisions, never to sign the NPT, and made it clear. The Indians have made it clear that they are willing to give up their nuclear weapons when we give up ours. And you know, in the non-proliferation treaty, the nuclear weapon states that are recognized, the United States, France, Britain, China, and Russia, have all agreed that the goal of the treaty under Article 6 is the ultimate elimination of nuclear weapons. That means that we have to be prepared to draw down ours in return for the other people pledging not to use them, to develop them, I should say. And that's Article 6 is a very... is something that this administration, at least, has refused to acknowledge. Or they keep claiming they're doing it, but the fact of the matter is most of the world is very impatient with the pace at which the United States, the Russians, and the British, French, and Chinese are proceeding to reduce the number of weapons in their arsenal.
Yeah, just I appreciate the comments of the caller, and I'm really glad that we got to this point, because I think, as you say, the NPT was, in a sense, a bargain between the countries that had nuclear weapons and those that didn't.
That's correct.
And that the promise that was entered into, it was not simply that those who didn't have the weapons were promising that they would not develop them, that is indeed what they were doing, but on the other side, the part that probably doesn't get the amount of attention that it should, is that the states that had nuclear weapons were pledging to reduce them with the ultimate goal of elimination. I'm not sure if anybody really thought we would ever get to that point, but at the very least that we would engage in a build down and a cutback of weapons. And
exactly
you believe that, in fact, that the declared nuclear weapons powers have not kept up their end of the bargain?
I'd say that at the 2000 review conference, every 5 years or so, there's a review, or 10 years, I guess, I think it's five. There's a meeting of the nuclear nonproliferation members, participants in the treaty, and in 2000 we made a statement that the ultimate goal, was the total elimination of nuclear weapons. That was put in the waning days of the Clinton administration. Okay, the Bush people at the 2005 conference refused to even state that the ultimate objective was the elimination of all nuclear weapons. They would not accept the kinds of statements that the Clinton administration made in the year 2000. And obviously, this is not something that pleases the fellows that have agreed to forego the option of pursuing nuclear weapons. They expect more than that from us. We can do much better.
We are a little bit past our midpoint here. We have some other callers, and I will get right to them in just a moment. I would like to introduce again the guest. Ambassador Robert Gray is director of the Bipartisan Security Group at the Global Security Institute. This is an organization that's interested particularly in nuclear arms control, non-proliferation, disarmament. They have a website. Just put Global Security Institute into your browser if you have internet access, and you can find out all about the Institute. It was founded by Senator Alan Cranston. Our guest, Ambassador Gray, is a former U.S. representative to the Conference on Disarmament, which is an international body that was set up to negotiate arms control agreements. He also was leader of the State Department UN reform team. He was a senior fellow on the Council on Foreign Relations and counselor for political affairs at the U.S. mission to the U.N. in New York. He also served as acting deputy director of the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, as well as counselor for political affairs at the U.S. mission to NATO in Brussels. And we're talking about arms control, particularly about the issue of proliferation in the Middle East. Questions are welcome, 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. We have another caller here in Urbana. We will talk with them next, line number two. Hello?
Yeah, good morning. Mm-hmm. Do you assess the threat of nuclear terrorism from non-state entities?
Yes, I think it's the real, that's the real new nuclear threat that the whole world is coming to grips with. It would be an absolute disaster if a nuclear weapon got in the hands of one of these Al-Qaeda-type groups. And we're doing everything we can as a government to prevent that from happening. We have the Lund-Nugar legislation, which we assist the Russians in getting rid of their excess weapons and also in protecting and safeguarding the sites where the stuff is located. So, yeah, it's a real concern. I think that is the real proliferation concern of the moment.
There was a story that 10 years ago bin Laden somehow managed to get some suitcase nukes out of Central Asia. I wonder, is there any merit to that story that you know of?
I do not know whether that's the case. I mean, I don't really believe that a suitcase-type thing exists, and if it does, I think it's very improbable that he would ever get his hands on one. One thing that we have a lot of disagreements with the Russians about lots of things, but one thing we're both in entire agreement on is that we don't want loose nukes running around the world, and we work hard with others as well to make sure that doesn't happen. Doesn't mean it can happen, but it could. It could happen, but the fact of the matter is that it's a real issue, and it's something that everyone that has any sense of responsibility for this is very concerned about.
Well, I remember the 9/11 Commission folks were saying that they didn't think we were doing enough. In fact, that funds had been cut to pursue some of these programs. Did you have any comment on that? And I'll hang up. Thank you.
For sure. No, the funds may have been cut, but some of the problems have been in implementing stuff with the Russians. In other words, the money was appropriated, but it hasn't all been spent. But I mean, clearly this is something that every American administration, or Russian authorities, the British, everyone is very, very concerned about, and they're bending every effort to do their best to make sure it doesn't happen.
Does, given the fact that, as you say, a real focus of concern, perhaps maybe the major focus of concern, is that a non-state group, a group like Al-Qaeda or some other organization, would get its hands on a nuclear weapon or perhaps nuclear material, the fact that that's a growing concern and that is imperfectly addressed by the NPT, which is probably the main structure that's concerned with proliferation, given the fact that they're, and that we know from the activities of AQCon that there is a gray market or a black market on both know-how and materials, what sort of means do we have really to get at that?
In terms of the nuclear material, all of that. You have the IAEA, International Atomic Energy Commission, that monitors all of the commercial plants all over the world, and the nuclear power plants, and also is involved in that. So that's pretty much safeguarded. You have the nuclear weapon states that obviously take high responsibility for protecting their own assets and things. You wouldn't want to try to sneak into a nuclear base anywhere in the world. So there are procedures in place, but the Non-Proliferation Treaty is a treaty between states, obviously, and it doesn't address directly the terrorist thing, but the states themselves that have responsibility for protecting their own resources, whether they're either weapons or commercial-grade uranium, take their obligation very seriously. But given the proliferation of nuclear power plants around the world, obviously you it's a matter of concern, and you never know, but you do your best.
Let us continue. We'll talk with another caller, and the next person in line is in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Yes, this whole issue of nuclear weapons and nuclear proliferation, I'm very nonplussed about this because, we live in a country that probably has more nuclear weapons and warheads than any country in the world, and under the Nuclear Proliferation Agreement, we are supposed to diminish our nuclear stockpile, and I think the Bush administration may be trying to come up with more sophisticated nuclear weapons. At least tactical nuclear weapons. My question to you is, and I think this is all a problem of our foreign policy generally, and with regard to this issue, there seems to be a variance between our rhetoric in this regard and our actions. For example, India, not a member of the NPT, recently a president engaged in some type of nuclear agreement with them that I think might exacerbate the problem in South Asia, especially with Pakistan, instead of ameliorating the problem. A.J. Khan, I know Khan, has been a leader in proliferation of Pakistan nuclear technology, and it doesn't seem we do anything in that regard other than to continue to give Musharraf money. And it was a well-kept secret that Israel had nuclear weapons, but until recently, no one was willing to admit that. And none of these three countries are a member of the NPT. I find that these are the axes of evils, potentially in terms of nuclear instability, rather than the one the president touted on his State of the Union address. So tell me, why is this disparity between our rhetoric and our actions?
Well, in terms of rhetoric and actions and in terms of this administration, I agree completely with what you say. We can't have our cake and eat it too. And that's what these people are trying to do. They're all concerned about other people proliferating, and at the same time, they're weaponizing space, which is destabilizing in a nuclear sense, too, because if you have a defense against a nuclear weapon, the other fellow is going to figure out either build more weapons or come up with some way to counter it. So the so-called weaponization of space, which this administration is pursuing, it has nuclear implications as well, and it's not a good implication. You cannot propose, as this administration is, to build a whole new generation of nuclear weapons and then say, but we're against proliferation by other people. You have to live up to your part of the treaty, or the other fellow at the end of the day won't live up to his. This administration seems to have come up with a sort of a unilateralist, belligerent approach to the rest of the world community, and it simply won't work. That's why we need a change. That's why Mr. Obama's position on a lot of these issues is just exactly what we in the arms control community think makes sense, both politically, rationally, and morally.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. Well, you mentioned a little bit earlier, Ambassador Gray, the fact that there is a periodic review of the NPT every 5 years.
That's right.
And the last review conference took place in 2005.
So
and
2010, and we're going in again.
Going to go again in 2010. And it's my understanding that, in fact, back in 2005, there was conflict around this very issue between the United States on the one hand and almost everybody else.
Everyone else at the meeting.
On the other hand, and it had to do with the fact that the United States, what they wanted to talk about was proliferation and their concerns about Iran, and the rest of the world, or many of the other countries, were saying to the United States, look, our concern here is the fact that the declared nuclear weapon states, chief among them the United States, has not abided by its part of the NPT. When we get around to talking about this again in 2010, do you think that the poles of the argument are still going to be the same?
Hopefully, in 2010, we'll have a new administration that reverts to the traditional approach we've had to international diplomacy since the end of the Second World War, which is multilateral cooperation and seeking consensus. And hopefully, the United States will once again take the lead in these issues, rather than being the skunk at the lawn party.
We will continue to talk with our guest here. Let me just mention again, our guest is Ambassador Robert Gray. He's former U.S. Representative to the Conference on Disarmament. He is now the director of the Bipartisan Security Group at the Global Security Institute. Again, this is an organization that's particularly interested in the issues of arms control and nuclear non-proliferation and disarmament. They do have a website if you'd like to find out more about them and about the issue. Just put into your browser Global Security Institute. You will be able to find them. We have other callers here, and our next is in St. Charles, line 3. Hello.
Good morning. I'm hearing some really disturbing calls coming up, and what disturbs me is that everybody's anti-everything. I firmly believe if you would have had a leftist in the office of the White House, you wouldn't be hearing this. Because they want to use every excuse in the book to delete and basically disarm this country, and I'm not a righty either. So, and I've seen this over the years. I know people that have come from Russia, and they'll say this. And just recently, I've read this and seen this on CNN. that the Russians will sell anything to get money, okay? Regardless of what you hear from some of these other people, they'll sell parts of the nuclear submarines, and they have sold nuclear submarines to other countries. Now, you know, what I see is a growing trend of arms races again. And if we were to disarm ourselves, how long do you think it would be before somebody would just nuke the crap out of us? Because I see that happening. I see this. I see our country disarming ourselves and telling us we can't have guns, we can't have this, we can't have that. Our constitutional rights are being taken away from us daily, and yet, you know, you sit there and you tell me that nuclear weapons, you know, it's the same thing with the global warming thing. China makes more pollution in the world than any other country, and yet, you know, they want us to come down to China's level on everything. I just don't get it. I firmly believe if we didn't deal with the Middle East at all, we wouldn't be talking about this. Am I right?
Well, I don't know, Ambassador Gray, you can respond to that any way you like. I guess my the one piece I would pick out of there and the one question that I would ask would be something like this. If the United States got rid of all of its nuclear weapons and maintained everything else that we had, let's just say that tomorrow we could say, all right, the United States will have no more nuclear weapons. In what way would that affect the security of the United States and the ability of this country to defend itself against potential attack?
Are you asking, you're posing this to me?
I'm posing that to you, yes.
Well, very simply put, we're not in that position today. We have 6,000 or so nuclear weapons that are immediately available and several thousand more in the storeroom. So we're not unilaterally disarming at all. The issue, and it's not a question of constitutional or anything, the issue is what is adequate for our national security? And I think a world in which there were much fewer nuclear weapons would be much better for our security, because the only thing that can wreck us today is if someone pops us with a nuclear weapon. Now, we have thousands of nuclear weapons that are certified to be good for the next 40 years in our inventory. If we were to take them down by half or down to one-third, we'd still have enough to blow up the whole world twice. So that's not an issue. It seems to me that the nuclear weapon, especially in an age of terrorism, has become the weapon of the poor, not the weapon of the strong. A world without nuclear weapons, with our military the way it is today, our conventional military, would be a much safer and more secure world in terms of our national security interests than a world that has a proliferation of these weapons out there. Even though we have more than anybody else, it only takes about 50 to wreck you. Hmm. If you get several thousand, you can wreck everything. On the China global warming thing, I would have to say that I think we're number one and China's number two, but they're catching up in terms of pollution. Once again, if we don't take the lead, you're right, Chinese pollution, Indian pollution, the pollution from the developing world will really cause global warming at an alarming speed. But unless we take the lead and begin to set an example by cutting back on our own emissions, we can't expect others to do it without us. We have to take the lead, and the only solution for our national security, whether it's nuclear weapons or global warming or anything else, is for us to take the lead in creating an international order which deals with these things in a sensible manner. We cannot run the world by ourselves, and if what happened in Iraq and in Afghanistan is a vivid demonstration that you can't do it alone. You have to do it with other people. You can't solve any of these problems unilaterally.
We have just about 5 minutes left, and I have several other callers. I'd like to include at least one more, so I want to thank the last and go on to someone in Urbana and line one. Hello.
Hello. Commenter was talking about the United States supporting indirectly other countries and nuclear activities and research. In the late 50s and 60s, there were doctoral students, other students at the University of Illinois studying nuclear physics as well as engineering disciplines. And though they may not have physically put together a atomic weapons for these students came from Pakistan, India, Israel. They may not have physically put together weapons themselves or directed the projects, but were certainly the United States was involved in the proliferation of the knowledge of how to develop these weapons. Just want to make that comment.
All right. Well, Ambassador Gray, do you want to comment on that at all?
The knowledge of how to make nuclear weapons is something any physicist can learn at any school at any time. And clearly, this guy Kahn, he was educated in Holland, and certainly he picked up a lot of the information. What is difficult is not having the technical knowledge, but having the materials and the manufacturing capability to do something with them. But the man's right. Education, you can't suppress knowledge. No one's figured out a way to do that. I'm reminded of the fact that I guess it was in Poland or someplace where they, when they got the potato, they tried to reserve the potato just for the royalty, and of course that didn't work. You can't suppress knowledge.
One more caller here, at least in Urbana, line number 2. Hello.
Hello. A quick comment. It seems to me that nuclear weapons are not very useful weapons, that they're a deterrent and very little else because you can't use them. If you were to have a massive strike against another country, you could probably devastate it. Perhaps not very much more than our conventional weapons. But then the problem of occupying that country, and you would still have that, would not be a very pretty picture, to speak of the fallout in our own country, because nuclear waste does rip. Would you comment? Thank you.
Well, Ambassador Gray, you want to comment?
Absolutely correct. I mean, I guess I'm dating myself, but I remember the movie On the Beach, which the only people left were in Australia, and the clouds were coming. Yes, obviously, this it's an indiscriminate, awful weapon. The consequences last for generations. It's in no one's interest to ever have one of these things go off. I don't know who is deterred by several thousand nuclear weapons in today's world, how you deter a terrorist. I think a world in which we work towards the eventual and ultimate elimination of these things would be in all our interests.
All right, and again, we'll try one more. Berkeley here, line number 4, a toll-free line. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Maybe this is a counterpoint. George Orwell wrote in 1945 an essay titled You and the Atomic Bomb, and it was about the difficulty of manufacturing nuclear weapons and the political ramifications of that in terms of they would only be available to large nation states, that would encourage the standoff that we saw for about 50 years between large nation states that used their overpowering leverage to take advantage of the rest of the world. So it's probably a good read because it's quite prescient. It's probably the first place that the term Cold War was used. So it's an essay titled You and the Atomic Bomb by George Orwell. If your readers look it up, if they're interested. I guess the last words that I would say on that is add Moore's Law to the equation, and you'll get a picture of what the future is. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. We're at the point where we have maybe about a couple of minutes left, and I guess, Ambassador Gray, I'm interested in what sort of thoughts you'd like to leave people with on this issue. We've covered a fair amount of ground here.
I would leave them with this thought. Global warming is a serious issue. It's something that we have to deal with immediately. But global warming pales in comparison to what would happen if a nuclear weapon started going off all over the place. It's as real a threat as global warming, and it's incumbent upon the United States to take the lead both in global warming and in nuclear arms reductions if we're going to succeed and make this a safer world for the kids that are coming after us.
Yeah. It certainly seems to be the case. This is one of those things that once the Cold War ended, the Soviet Union was gone, we didn't have that kind of superpower tension anymore, that a lot of people simply, the issue of nuclear weapons seems simply to drop off of their list of things to be worried about.
That's right.
Not that it should have, but it did.
Yeah, they're still around, and they still can go off in 10 minutes. Don't forget that. They're on hair trigger alert in our country and in the Soviet Union and in other places as well. They are real. They're still there. And God help us if they're ever used. That's why we have to continue our efforts to get rid of them.
Our guest for this hour, Ambassador Robert Gray, is director of the Bipartisan Security Group at the Global Security Institute. You can find them on the web. Just put that into your browser. It's an organization that's interested in this issue, particularly nuclear arms control, nonproliferation, and disarmament. Ambassador Gray is former U.S. representative to the Conference on Disarmament. And Ambassador Gray, thank you very much.
You're entirely welcome.